So as I talked about in the children's story, this next week we celebrate 4th of July, or Independence Day. Now it's a celebration of throwing off the yoke of oppression. Now sometimes I wonder if Americans have too much of a fascination and possibly even an idolization of freedom and independence. You know, sometimes wonder, has it become one of our gods? Now we celebrate the freedom, but we also believe in, no, we can go it alone kind of attitude. We don't need any help. Now there's the entrepreneurial spirit. You know, we're Americans are great wealth builders. And it's because of, you know, the freedom that we cherish. And often, we do equate freedom with independence. Americans do not like to be told what to do or what we can't do. Now, whether it's as an individual or as a group or as a nation. In fact, perhaps, you know, being dependent is even considered a sign of weakness. Now, speaking as a male member of the human race, you know, I can understand that. That we're particularly bad about, say, you know, reading instructions. No, we don't need help. We can figure out this machine on our own. Or about asking for directions. Now, oh, we can find a way. You know, we just follow this road, and eventually, it'll get us to where we want to go. Now, there's the kind of the famous song, or infamous song, My Way. You know, I did it my way. So there's a lot to be said about independence and freedom. You know, my way. But what does the Bible really say about freedom, and what does the Bible say about independence? What does the Bible show about God and about this world? I think it tells us perhaps that our conventional wisdom about independence and freedom are not quite right. As I noted in the children's story, the spirit of human independence was the cause of the original slavery to sin. Now the first people lost their freedom because of their desire to be independent from God. They wanted to be masters of their own future. In that, the Bible shows that Jesus came to help us, help people, help humans, see that dependence on God really is the better way. Jesus came to help us learn how to become re-dependent upon Him. And I wonder, is this the real reason and purpose of salvation? And is this the work that God does through salvation? To help us become dependent on Him once more. We're looking at the story of the paralyzed man at the pool of Bethesda. John chapter 5, verses 1 through 18. And as we go through it together, I want you to keep a few things in kind of the back of your minds here. The first is regarding the connection between healing and salvation. Now we've spoken in the past few weeks about that connection, where in the Bible, when Jesus especially talks of healing, He's talking about salvation. The two are the same in His mind. Healing and salvation. Another thing that perhaps we should keep in mind as we read the story is the connection between Sabbath and healing. As I read in the scripture reading, John makes a particular point of emphasizing that this healing took place on the Sabbath, so maybe we should keep that in mind. In fact, perhaps healing is the raison d'etre, or reason for existence, of the Sabbath. And then what about the purpose of the Sabbath? You know, the reason for the Sabbath, the purpose of the Sabbath. Have we gotten so narrow-minded in our definitions of work and rest that we've lost sight of the real meaning of Sabbath? What is the purpose of the Sabbath? You know, as we read through this, I would like to suggest that perhaps the Sabbath is a tool to remind us of the Creator, the Recreator, the Redeemer, the Savior, the Healer, and the Restorer. And perhaps John gave us this story in order to emphasize that point about the Sabbath. So I'm just going to start with verse 1 of chapter 5 here and begin reading and making a few comments. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. What feast? John doesn't say, and commentaries are kind of ambiguous as to what it could have been. A lot of them suggest Passover, but John Pauline, one of our seminary professors, suggests that because of the context of the story, he suggests that it was the Feast of Trumpets. The Feast of Trumpets occurred 10 days before the Day of Atonement in the Jewish calendar, and it announced through the trumpets both a creation theme and a judgment theme. And then after the Day of Atonement, 5 days later, was the Festival of Shelters, or Festival of Booths, where the Jews remembered their time of wandering in the wilderness. The name Bethesda literally means house of mercy. And I believe John included this particular detail both for a literary reason, but also as a symbolic purpose, where house of mercy, that's what the Jewish nation was supposed to have been. Yet, they had lost it. And now Jesus had come. Jesus had come into this house, Bethesda, where this pool was unable to heal this paralytic that we're going to see. But Jesus, when he comes into the house of mercy, he is able to heal. And in these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. And I wonder if this represents the condition of many people. Does it represent our condition? Are we in need of healing? Following verse 3, there's most of the newer translations omit verse 4. Verse 4 reads, starting with actually the latter part of verse 3, these blind, lame, and paralyzed, they were waiting for the moving of the water, for an angel of the Lord went down at certain seasons into the pool and stirred the water. Whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was healed of whatever disease he had. Why have most translators chosen to omit this verse? There's a pretty good reason. If it's included as part of the original, there's some troubling theological implications here. For example, is God's grace doled out in a contest-like manner? Whoever gets there first gets God's grace, gets God's healing. This verse was probably added by a scribe as a footnote sometime during the translation and copying process, as a note to the readers at that time that this is what the Jews believed, that the Jews did indeed believe that some angel had stirred the waters, even though it was probably a natural phenomenon, as the pool, there was a rush of water and the pool would ripple, and then a person would go in and, for some reason, the first person who went in got healed. Well, we know today that many diseases have their roots in the mind, and if a person believes that he's been truly healed, if the disease was really in the mind, then he would be healed. And in fact, the whole idea of a healing pool appears to have had a pagan origin. There were many such things in Greek and Roman thought, and the Jews, at least some of them, appear to have adopted that. And so, whatever the case, the translators have opted to omit this from the main body of the text. So we go on to verse 5. One man who was there, who had been an invalid for 38 years, when Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" This man had been here for 38 years. 38 years was the number of years of wandering in the wilderness after the children of Israel first came to the borders of Canaan. To tie back to that kind of the allusion to Festival of Booths, Festival of Shelters, which was further implied by the Feast of Trumpets. What's interesting, I think, to note is that this man did not request healing. Jesus simply came to him and said, "Do you want to be healed?" Jesus took the initiative, like he does with everyone. Jesus took the initiative to save people from sin, save us from sin. Well, this man had no idea who Jesus was. He didn't even know that he could be healed. He had tried so many times before, and he had probably given up. And all of a sudden, here comes this man asking, this man lying on the floor, "Do you want to be healed? If you were that man, what would you think?"
No, I'm just laying here for my
What's interesting is his response. The sick man answered him and said, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me." This man didn't even say, "Yes, I want to be healed." He says, "You know what? I've tried before. I can't." He's essentially, it seems to me like he's saying, I'd like to be healed, but it's just not possible. I've given up. Why did Jesus choose this man? Couldn't there have been a better prospect? He was probably fairly old by this time, 38 years, 38, talking, I would guess, maybe 40, 50, or even 60 years old. Somewhere in there. Not much more life left to him. And as we read through the story, we see that this person really doesn't care a whole lot about Jesus. But towards the end of the story, he just rats on Jesus, is basically what he does. Couldn't Jesus have found a better prospect? Someone who would be his disciple? Someone who would have a better future ahead of him? But no, Jesus comes to apparently the most ungrateful, perhaps the oldest, the most pitiful of the sick lying around the pool. And that should encourage us, because Jesus is willing to heal anyone. Jesus is willing to heal everyone. In fact, Jesus is going to heal people even if they don't ask for it. Well, which happened? Well, Jesus says to him, after this man gives his kind of excuse as to why he's still there, Jesus said to him, "Go, get up, take up your bed and walk." And notice the order. At once the man was healed, and then he took up his bed and walked. Well, this man didn't have to exercise any faith whatsoever in order to be healed. He was simply healed. This phrase, "take up your bed and walk," is repeated 3 times in this short story. So there is probably some importance to it. The man, when he felt his limbs healed, when he felt strength come back to his arms, to his legs, he could have still sat there saying, "Well, you know, that's great, but I'm comfortable here. You know, this is where I've been." And culturally speaking, he was probably making a fairly, you know, he was making a decent living. Begging, probably, is what he was doing. Accepting the mercy of other people, little coins and things that were given to him. And so, if he chose to get up and walk, it would mean he would have to choose a different way of life. He would actually have to maybe go find work, real work. Well, he didn't just sit there anymore. But at least he had enough sense, and maybe enough, just a little bit of faith to get up and walk. And so, and at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed." This man had enough faith, but not much. And John brings in the whole problem with the Sabbath in Jesus. Jesus always had a problem with the Sabbath. It's funny. Jesus, the creator of the Sabbath, had a problem with how the people interpreted the Sabbath. Unless we get too smug about it, I think we need to examine our own understandings about the Sabbath also. Because, you know, as I've been kind of studying this, as I've been reading this, been wondering, are my assumptions about the Sabbath always correct? And I would probably have to answer, you know, I really have no idea. You know, I have things that I've been taught, that I've learned, but are they correct? And I would have to answer, you know, I can't be absolutely certain. If Jesus was here, what would he say? I don't know. What I do know is that Sabbath is a day to offer freedom to captives. That was Jesus' mission. And when Jesus began, he went to Nazareth and got up to speak, and the story in Luke 4, where he says his mission statement is to free the captives, to help the oppressed, the widows, so forth. I believe also that the Sabbath is a day to heal relationship wounds. The Sabbath is a day to create and enhance relationships between individuals and between communities. As we look at this story here, this man had been sick for 38 years. Couldn't Jesus have gone the next day and it really wouldn't have mattered, would it? Just one more day. But Jesus specifically chose the Sabbath day to perform his healing. And maybe there's significance in that. Maybe when we have the opportunity to do something that heals in the bigger sense of the word than just, just physical sickness. Adventists traditionally have been very good about letting doctors and nurses work on the Sabbath because, they're healing. But have we defined the word heal and healing too narrowly? I wonder. This man, when he's asked, why are you carrying this mat? When the Jews ask this man, why are you carrying this mat? The man answers them, the man who healed me, the man who said to me, take up your bed and walk. And then the Jews asked him again, the Jewish rulers, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn as there was a crowd in the place. It's interesting that the Jewish rulers completely dismiss the miracle. They only refer to the man who said, take up your bed and walk. The Jewish rulers are very obsessed with the fact that someone has commanded that this man break the Sabbath, according to their understanding of what the Sabbath ought to be. They dismissed the miracle completely. They weren't at all thankful that this man is now walking. There was no praise to God for that. How could God do that on the Sabbath? It's not proper. Putting God in a little box is what they're doing. I think we need to be careful that we don't do the same thing. This man, this poor man, he was healed. He didn't know who it was. He probably never bothered to find out. And afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. From that, I gather that this man had experienced the physical part of the healing, but has he experienced the spiritual healing, the heart healing? Seems this man was really just all about superficial faith again, a theme that John writes about. Spiritual healing and true restoration, salvation, requires a genuine faith. This man seemed to be lacking in that part. And again, John is saying to us, to the generation of Christians that didn't see Jesus' miracles firsthand, guess what? Even if you personally experience a miracle, if you don't already have faith, it's not going to bring you to faith. And then the man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. Now, this man is, it's an idiot. Either that or I don't know what to say about him because he is so unbelievable in his actions and responses. Yet, God loves him. God heals him. And I guess that should be an encouragement because when I act like an idiot, God's still there. And when I make stupid mistakes, God's still there. He says, I can heal you. But in order to be healed, I need to get up and walk. I can't wallow in my past mistakes. I have to get up and walk. We don't know what happened to this man afterwards, but John makes his point. Anyone and everyone can be healed, and does get healed. But not everyone experiences complete healing, complete restoration that Jesus wants for everyone, because some people don't have the faith that's necessary to experience that total healing. And so Jesus is persecuted by the Jewish rulers. And Jesus answered them, My Father is working until now, and I am working. This was why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. So I wonder, each Sabbath comes around every 7 days, what are we doing to free captives, to bring freedom to others? Independence Day occurred way back in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve thought that they were going to experience more freedom, but instead they found themselves enslaved and captive to self and to sin. They made the mistake of equating in their minds, and maybe we do too sometimes, freedom with independence. When they separated themselves from God, the only source of freedom, they discovered that freedom and independence are not the same thing. I would dare say Sabbath is a weekly dependence day, and it always has been from the very beginning. From the very first Sabbath, it was meant as a day where we depend upon God. But the Sabbath is about freedom. Dependence brings freedom. It brings true freedom. Sabbath is the day where we can experience freedom from captivity to sin and to self. Freedom from fear and death. Freedom from the troubles of today. Freedom from the past. Freedom from the anxieties of the future. Freedom to enjoy fellowship with God and with other people. Freedom to enjoy all the ways in which God brings us joy. Freedom to serve others for the joy it will bring them, and us, and God. Freedom to bring others to the threshold of true freedom. We can't bring freedom to anyone else, but we can bring them to the threshold where they can grasp it for themselves. But all this freedom can only come when we are dependent upon Jesus. Our full trust and confidence has to be in Jesus. True freedom can exist only in a relationship of dependent trust upon the only one who can offer freedom. We're saved and healed from independence to dependence. From slavery to independence to freedom through dependence. I want to conclude by reading Matthew 11, 28-30. Sure, you probably know it by heart if I start reading. Then Jesus said, Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. Interesting how right afterwards, next chapter, there's a discussion about the Sabbath. Maybe that's what Sabbath is about. Finding rest so that we can work for God.